And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Tam.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't know how to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national reporter. Here, as always, we are having this kind of carousel of the best and the writing staff at the Athletic to break down this season that is already up and running, but not officially. This is not the real stuff that's around the corner. And today with me on the show to talk about all things Western Conference, we have, I'm going to start out in the deep west, Anthony Slater. Resident Warriors beat writer, Lakers analyst. I can't even speak today. Slater, what's up, brother?
What's up? We got some preseason basketball. How you guys doing?
Preseason hoops. We got going a little bit east, not too far. We got Tony Jones, Utah Jazz beat writer. Been a long time. Tony, what's up, my guy?
What's going on, man? How's everything? Thanks for having me.
Going fine, man. Of course. Good to see you. This is the life we're living right now, connecting with y'all virtually, but we are on video here, even the listeners can't see that. But we're going to break down the West. And guys, there's a lot to get to today. And obviously, we're going to talk usual suspects. Lakers, Clippers, go out your way, Tony, with the Jazz and the Warriors. I think the secret, you know, word in the West, or the key word, is parity. I was looking at the standings today and reminding myself from last year that, I mean, parity was not something that we saw a ton of in the West, at least when you talk about, you know, the top of the top with the Lakers and the Clippers. And the Lakers, I think because we looked at the Clippers like the load management squad, we never really gave the Lakers the credit they deserve for creating as much distance as they did between, you know, themselves and the field. I mean, they had a nice gap, won the West handily. This year, as I was looking at all these different questions we're going to get into today, it just hit me that, like, you know, everything is going to be by the skin of your teeth, I think, in the standings. Now, maybe the Lakers and Clippers can separate themselves, but I think it's going to be fun. And like I said, we're going to make the rounds. But let's start with the situation that is front and center for everybody in the association. So by demand, we're going to jump out to Houston and talk about one James Harden, because, you know, this situation that I've been trying to stay on top of, that obviously our guy Shams Charania has been breaking news on, Kelly Eco, our Rockets beat writer, telling good stories. This thing is not going away. And James clearly does not want to be with the Rockets anymore. And it has not changed, even with John Wall coming to town, even with DeMarcus Cousins being part of this group, even with them looking pretty good against Chicago in the preseason, doing the kinds of things that even John had talked about, John Wall, like, essentially, maybe this will get James' attention and make him feel better about being here. I don't think that's going to happen. And so with James, I want to ask you guys just where you stand on the question of, do you think he finishes this season as a Rocket? And if not, where do you think he's going? Slater, why don't you hop in, brother?
I mean, I don't mean to enter the podcast, you know, throwing heaters, but I kind of think he's being overvalued and overrated.
Of course, the Warriors place. Guy would say that.
No, I just, to me, right now, I think the biggest issue is, like, it sounds what Houston wants, I just don't know that they can get. You know, you hear, like, Ben Simmons plus picks. It's like, Would you rather have the next 7 years of Ben Simmons,
right,
his numbers, or the numbers that James Harden is going to be getting into his 30, 31, 32, 33? He's going to want $50 million, those mega contracts that those guys get as they age out. James Harden seems to be somewhat declining. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily part of the conversation. He's still an unbelievable scorer. I know he's a superstar this year. I just, to me...
Hold on, fill in the gap on that. Where, I mean, I'm not, top of mind, I'm not seeing it. Where do you see him declining?
It's just kind of like fading a little bit. I mean, obviously he fades every year in the playoffs. You know, he seems to tire out. But I just mean the efficiency is kind of down. I mean, look, he went from absolutely like top five, maybe most efficient scorer ever. It just, you know, it's the margins. And the he's such an
awkward age. He's 31.
Anywhere. Yeah, you know, to me, like, you know, let's say you put him on Miami. Like, do you think that's going to be seamless? Like, you put him in Brooklyn. You think that's going to be seamless? I mean, Tony, you can jump in. But and I don't know how you feel about, like, James as an asset. I know, like, to me, he could be the final piece somewhere. But it's just, it's not, like, one of those just, I don't know. I'm just not as there on him as maybe others.
Well, I think the biggest.
What do you think, Tony?
I'm sorry. I think the biggest thing that you have to ask yourself is if you trade. If you're a team and you trade for him, does that automatically give you a championship, or is it at that automatically give you a runway to a championship? So if you're Philly and you trade, let's say just for the sake of argument, you trade Ben Simmons and three first round picks, does that make you the favorite in the East? Does James Harden and Joel Embiid make you the favorite in the East? Same thing to ask yourself if you're Miami. Or, you know, any one of a number of contenders, especially at those numbers. And I think the answer is no. You know, I would think that if you're Philly and you traded for James Harden, it would obviously, I think it would make you a better team than Ben Simmons right now. But, I mean, I couldn't be sure because I happen to hold a lot of esteem for Ben Simmons. I think he's a terrific two-way player, terrific two-way talent. So it's interesting and it's difficult, on a number of levels and it's hard and it makes me, going back to Sam's original question, it makes me wonder, you know, does that happen? Does James Harden, you know, is he traded or is he still in Houston, you know, even by the trade deadline? You know, I think the desire is for James Harden, obviously, to want to move on to another situation. I think the desire for Houston might be to acquiesce to that request. But somebody, it still takes two to tango, and you still have to find a taker. And that is a really, really difficult contract to trade.
If I was Houston, I would take Ben Simmons for James Harden straight up right now.
Yeah.
The second.
Yeah.
I would do that trade. But it doesn't sound to me like Houston's there. It sounds like Houston's like,
well, I feel like we might've talked about this last week, but part of what Houston is doing that I don't think is going to pay off in the end is they're acting as if, you know, other teams should actually care about previous transactions, that there's some sort of in totality perspective on, well, we gave up this much to get Russell Westbrook and now we moved him on it. And they're so in the red when it comes to assets with the way they've moved the last couple of years that somehow the person who trades for James Harden is responsible for replenishing some of that. That's just not how it works. Tony, you got me thinking a little bit about, God, you know, is there any way they would hold on to him through the season? I don't think so. I mean, I think where I fall on this thing is I think that he will be on the move. I agree that it's going to be really challenging. I don't like most of the candidates that have been discussed in terms of like viability of a deal. You know, I look at Milwaukee, I think that's really complicated, not to mention, you know, all of a sudden when that prospect came out on social media the other day, the old video of Giannis kind of joking about how James doesn't pass the ball kind of made the rounds, which I think, you know, does matter. To me, Philly is the natural landing spot. And even though everything you guys said about Simmons is dead on, you know, I'm going to lean into the idea that Daryl Morey has got the biggest soft spot for James Harden of anybody on the planet. He is the guy that empowered him the way that, you know, really right now, I think we're seeing the downside of the way the Rockets empowered James. And it wasn't just Daryl, but it was definitely Daryl at the head of that line. They essentially told James, this is your franchise. And so it seems natural that on the back end of that, Darryl would be the guy to make the move, even if, Tony, like you said, you know, Ben Simmons is the guy that you should be betting on for the long term. So we'll see what happens there. You know, but it's such an interesting situation. I'll be honest, I feel bad for John Wall and DeMarcus, because those guys look like they're ready to rock, and I'm sure they want clarity on just what their season's going to look like.
Well, see, here's the thing. I mean, you know, there's two schools of thought that I have here. For one, if I'm Houston, I'm not sure that I'm trying to get an all-star talent back. I mean, they've treaded – I don't want to say treaded water, but they've, you know, they've given away so many of their assets.
Falling short.
My thing right. is, if you're trading James Harden, you got to try to get some assets back, a lot of them.
Right.
And that's the first school of thought. But the second school of thought for me is, you know, that Houston team that we saw – or that we saw, you know, this weekend, if that's real, this is still a good team, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's still a team that has some variety. It's still a team that's dynamic off the dribble. It's still a team that's dynamic from behind the three-point line. And it's still a team that can be dynamic defensively if it chooses to be. So, you know, it's not a team that's going to contend, but it's still a team that's going to be competitive. You know.
But if you put James on it, Tony, you know what I mean?
Right.
If you take everything else away, you take away the dysfunction, you take away – that's, to me, the unfortunate part for the Rockets is that I think it has so much to do with personal dynamics between Tillman Fertitta and James and the decisions that have been made, Mike D'Antoni heading for the exits, obviously Darryl going to Philly. But if you strip all that away and you just talk about the game and you say – you know, where could James Harden make the most noise this season? I think that team is on the list. You know what I mean? And his best route might be to just go back to work, but it just doesn't work that way because he's a human being who obviously is feeling pretty strongly about that situation right now.
Well, he obviously doesn't want to be in a situation. And, you know, the other thing is, I mean, you know, he's made it very clear. I mean, when you're on video on, you know, the first day of training camp and you're at a strip club and you're making it rain, then obviously you don't want to be there. And then you're at Lil Baby's birthday party, and then you're in Vegas, or, you know, the thing about James Harden is he's not often on social media. So, I mean, these posts to me, I mean, it wasn't.
That's a good point.
You know, these posts to me, it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't a coincidence.
Right.
So, you know, obviously he sent some really strong messages, and, you know, I think it's up to both parties to kind of just, you know, figure it out and figure out the best course of action.
What's even like the percentage chance that we're sitting here in 2 months and James Harden's playing good offensive basketball and the Rockets are a feel-good story? Like, that just seems so unlikely at this point. To me, Miami's a little bit of a stealth destination that, you know, if they're maybe waiting on the Giannis decision, you know, does he sign the Supermax or not? Because let's say Giannis does commit to the Bucks, and, you know, Sam, you might know more about that than I do. But if he did, does Miami pivot and go, okay, so if we know we're not going to get Giannis, here's Tyler Hero and some picks. And to me, if you're Houston, they're probably the last, you know, part of this partner in this whole scenario that just needs to go, look, I know we have dreams of getting the Anthony Davis package for Harden, but they need to accept something less than that, and that's
yeah.
probably the last thing that needs to happen.
I mean, I could see that if, like you said, the Giannis thing turns that way, and then if Pat Riley gets on the phone with, you know, the permission of the Rockets, I'm going to pretend that they wouldn't tamper there, and convinces him of that Heat culture in the way that he has so many other stars. Like, you don't do that move unless you feel pretty good about the vibe that James has given you in those conversations, because that's the other thing with James is that it's, I don't know that we've ever seen a former MVP who is such a problematic fit with so many teams because of the way that he has taken his career in terms of how he plays. And that's, again, it goes back to the way the Rockets were structured and built. You know, I mean, Slater, when Shams reported about the Warriors putting a call in on Harden, you know, your mind immediately goes to that place like, wait, could he even fit? You know, would he even be willing to share the ball that way? Would he be willing? Because it's not a case of where is his best shot at a championship. I do think that, you know, neck and neck with that, if not above it, is where can he play the game the way that he's gotten used to playing the game? And I think that's a problem for a lot of teams. We'll see what happens there. Let's keep it moving in this West breakdown. We're going to kind of go backwards and talk about the squads that might be going the wrong direction. And the question here, guys, is who makes the biggest fall? Now, resident Oklahoman Andrew Schlecht has decided that OKC cannot be part of this group. Listen, Andrew, by the way, don't be sleeping on them again. They had a few moments in the preseason, and who knows if they win more games than we thought they would, like they did last year. But who do you guys see going the wrong direction based on the offseason moves? Tony, let me throw it to you.
Well, I mean, I think the obvious team that you point to is Denver. And that's because, you know, they've lost a lot on the margins of what made them Western Conference Finals good. Now, you know, I still think Denver has a chance to be really good because I think the world of the Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic foundation. And I think that Michael Malone is a terrific coach. And I think that he has a tendency to have his team be resilient and to figure things out. But, you know, one of the reasons why Denver caused so many issues for the Utah Jazz in the first round of the playoffs and the Los Angeles Clippers in the second round is because Jeremy Grant. I mean, that was an elite athlete. When you have a 6'9" guy who, you know, can kind of guard 2 through 4, who, you know, improved beyond the arc the way he did, who could steal possessions on Kawhi Leonard defensively, and who was just so above the rim athletically, you know, that was a great complement to the skill and the cerebral nature of Murray and Jokic. So, you know, I thought that was a big loss for them. And I thought that, you know, Mason Plumlee was a big loss for them. Going from Mason Plumlee to Isaiah Hartenstein as your second unit big is a steep drop off, particularly defensively. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how those guys, you know, I know they got Jermichael Green, but it's going to be interesting to see how those guys, you know, kind of compensate on the margins for what they lost. But I do think that, you know, out of all of the teams that were terrific last year, I think that Denver's a team that could drop a few spots.
I like that identification by Tony, because I do think there is, like, you know, when we think about the history of the NBA, there's that thought you have the playoff breakthrough and that gets you to the next level. So the next season you should trampoline further. But, you know, he went on the margins of why I think Denver could be somewhat of a disappointment. How about Jamal Murray, too? To me, I just looked at his playoff numbers, 25, 26 points per game off 50, 45, 90. Is he that? You know, because you look at his regular season history, he's 18 per game.
Oh, here comes Slater with the bubble doubt. You're a bubble doubter. Yeah,
I think it's fair to wonder if Jamal Murray is Steph Curry 2016. Because in the playoffs he was. The playoffs he was that. And you know, if he is that, they're not going to be a disappointment. Right? I mean, they're just going to be awesome because they're going to have a superstar guard and a superstar center.
Right.
But I just don't know that Murray, over the course of an 82, like, was he just hot in that weird environment? You know, we'll see. Jamal Murray
easily
prove that he is. But do you guys think, like, Jamal Murray was, before the playoffs started, wasn't even an all-star. I mean, he was like the 20th best player in the West.
I mean, the first word you always thought of with Jamal was streaky, and that's not something that a star caliber player wants to be known as. He was inconsistent. He would have these incredible flashes, and then he would have, you know, single-digit scoring nights. We were going to talk more Denver down the road in this pod, but I think we should go all in on the Nuggets talk real quick here, because Tony, you break it down in a really smart way about why they might go the wrong direction. Somewhat for the sake of argument, I think I would counter with this. The Michael Porter Jr., you know, promotion, so to speak, that takes place with Jeremy skipping town, it's going to be like sink or swim, but I think it's going to be fun to watch. He's incredibly talented. The way he shoots that ball defensively, just a disaster, and he's got to get better on that end. And Michael Malone has been up his backside for a couple of years now on that front. But, you know, that obviously is their plan, to have Michael Porter Jr. play the bigger role. Now, that doesn't help you when you lose the guy in Jeremy who was out there guarding the LeBrons and the Kawhis, you know, pretty well. I don't know how you check that box. the Jamal Murray thing, he's got to be special again. And Slater, I would probably split the difference with you in terms of kind of that bubble doubt, because I think it's legit.
Yeah.
I mean, listen,
I do.
Like, I wrote a column talking to Jamal in the bubble, and, you know, this guy was out here sleeping, taking 5-hour naps during the day because, like, the bubble environment was so unique where he would just lock in, play ball. You know, now it's back to your home environment, juggling regular life, and who knows what impact that might have on his game. He was incredibly special. But the Jerami Grant thing, guys, like, that shocked them. And this has been widely reported, you know, they put the same money on the table for Jerami that Detroit did and couldn't believe that he wanted to go that direction. Now, his whole message to them was that he's betting on himself and he wanted a bigger role offensively. And that's not, you know, in terms of having a real nuanced, kind of sophisticated offensive game, that's not what he's known for. Seems like he wants to grow in that department. And that's definitely a step backwards. But I think they'll be right there. I mean, I've got like the kind of the Utah, Denver, Portland mix. Those teams seem like they're going to be really close together.
Yeah, I'm right with you, Sam. See, I think I would look at the tiers of the West like this. Like, I think the Lakers are significantly ahead of the rest of the Western Conference. I would put the Clippers number two, but slightly behind the Clippers, and I'm talking there's not much separation at all. I'm looking at Denver, I'm looking at Utah, I'm looking at Portland, and I'm looking at Dallas. All four of those teams, to me, can finish anywhere between 3 and 6 in any order. And it's just all going to depend on what happens in a few games during the regular season, you know. And so, right, you know, I think that, you know, when you look at Denver, like, just like you said, Sam, I think that they're going to be right there. And you're right. You know, the Michael Porter Jr. thing is going to be fascinating to watch because, right, you know, not only – number one, he's an incredible shot maker for his age. You know, so that – you know, that makes up a little bit for what he is defensively and what he isn't defensively. But number two, I mean, the thing that's fascinating for me is he's got a number one guy mentality on a team where he's going to be no higher than number three and maybe number four because you have Will Barton. So how's that dynamic going to work when – because, you know, there were a couple of times in the bubble – I mean, Nikola Jokic is looking for an outlet pass, and Michael Jordan's like, nah, go post up, big man. I got this. And this is Nikola Jokic that we're talking about, right?
Right, right, right.
Remember his post-game comment after one of the playoff games about, like,
oh, yeah,
we need to, you know, get me some right more looks.
Yeah, he's not – I'm trying to be soft. He's not savvy when it comes to that part of the game, and I think that actually might be a problem in the locker room. I mean, the Jerami Grant thing, you see a move like that, it makes you wonder just in general, where was he at in terms of not only his opportunity there, but did it have like a Michael Porter ripple effect?
I think I've heard some rumblings that part of Green's reason for leaving, number one, I mean, the Troy Weaver connection he has in Detroit.
From Grant, you're talking?
City days, for sure. Yeah, Grant, sorry. But also, I think he kind of sensed the writing on the wall that Porter was next up, somewhat positionally similar. And, you know, the personality of Porter Jr. is what it is. Yeah. I mean, it does, I think, bother some people around there.
Well, the thing about it is...
No, they'll be interesting.
The thing about it is, you know, he was right in the bubble, right? Like, he was the guy that in a pickup game, he's not getting the basketball. He stops playing defense and he outwardly complains to his team on the floor during the pickup game, yo, you're not getting me the ball. And the team says, okay, here's the ball and you do something. And guess what? He did something with it. Like, that was the fascinating part. Through all of that complaining, you know, went through a press conference, was like, yo, you're not getting me the rock. And then they gave him the rock and he actually delivered, you know, so that was the fascinating part of it for me.
Yep, no question. All right, guys, I'm going to keep it moving. Good Nuggets talk. I'm switching one of the questions again here to keep it in the same neighborhood because, Tony, you hit on the fact that you got these tiers to the West. So let's keep it going with that second tier. If you got to pick one, you know, Blazers or Jazz, what are we looking at? The Blazers go out. They get Robert Covington. I thought they had a nice offseason. Obviously, hold on to Melo, do some good things, and get Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum some help. They're going to have Yusuf Nurkic healthy, you know, and I think we saw late in the bubble what they can do with that trio. And then you add these role players. If you got to pick one of the two teams there, who do you think?
Can I spin this to Tony? I have a question for him.
Yes, sir.
Because this might inform my answer. Because I think Utah, we don't know anything about locker room dynamics. I like Utah more than Portland. But what's up with the Gobert situation and, you know, contract year? And like, do you get a sense that is going to be like a kumbaya locker room, or is that core getting a little stale there? Because if that's the case, I probably would like Portland more. But
they bought Derek Favors back to the locker room, and I cannot tell you how big that is for the locker room, because he is he's a galvanizer, and Derek is one of the guys that can, you know, talk to Donovan Mitchell, and Donovan Mitchell listens to him. Derek was Donovan's vet for those first 2 years that he was there. And I think Donovan missed Derek, as did the rest of the Jazz. I'm actually pretty high on the Jazz this year. I think they have a chance to be pretty good.
Me too.
I think, you know, they don't have the LeBron, they don't have the Kawhi, they don't have the Kevin Durant, they don't have the Stephen Curry or the Giannis. But what they do have is they have a ton of playmakers. They have a ton of guys that can just get at you off the dribble, get into the lane, find their shot, or find shots for other guys. They have a ton of shooters. I think that Favors galvanizes the second unit, especially defensively. And I think that the second unit was Utah's huge trouble spot last year. And if they fix that, I think they're going to win a lot of games. Now, I still don't know what to make of their playoff ceiling, but I think for their regular season ceiling, I would put them. I think they have a puncher's chance of being with any team in the West, not named the Los Angeles Lakers.
The continuity to me is like, that's what I think will be fun to watch in the West, is you got this group where they, you know, I think there's a clear separation between teams that have some continuity and some that don't, and some that are the new mixes. But I mean, the Jazz might be on top of that list when you talk about the core. And I talked to some folks out there last week, and the message that I was getting, and Tony, you hear this stuff every day, is that, first of all, and this is very important, coming out of the bubble, by all accounts, they came out of the bubble like close, tight, not fractured. Even with the 3-1, you know, disappointment to Denver, coming out of there with connectivity, coming out of there caring about one another. And after everything that happened, obviously with Rudy being the first NBA player who was publicly known to get COVID, and then everything from there, kudos to them for getting through that. And I think going forward, it seems like they're in a pretty good place. You know, you got your usual suspects. You got Joe Ingles out there. You re-sign Jordan Clarkson, make sure you hold on to that scoring. I like what they're doing. I am curious with Rudy and his extension situation, if that'll get done. Seems kind of like a 50-50.
Well, that's the big thing, you know.
Yeah.
So there's an offer on the table. There's a definitive offer on the table. The two sides have met. And the sense that I get is that, I mean, right now we're a week out, right? So the sense that I get is that it's probably going to come down to the wire with this.
Right.
And you know, it's interesting. You know, the Jazz want to give Rudy a lot of money, obviously, but they don't want to give Rudy the Supermax, obviously, because I think at 35% of the cap, it's going to be hard. The thing for the Jazz is they want to lock Rudy and Donovan in. They have Donovan locked in. They want to lock Rudy in, but they also want to try to get better on the margins, you know, as they have right. that core locked in. And you can't do that if you're given 35% of the cap. So there's a number that's on the table, and it's just going to be a question of whether both sides can find a number that they can live with sometime in the next 7 days.
Right.
That honestly might be the you know, story of their season. You know, do they get it done and there's cushy feelings going into the season and Gobert feels like he's committed there long term?
Right.
Or is he on a contract year where he's fighting for money and he's looking at the organization going like, you know, do you not believe in me fully? So,
right.
But Sam, you made the point I was going to make about the continuity. This is the continuity tier when we're mentioning Utah, Portland, and
right.
just the idea that they're going to roll it out game one and Lillard knows where McCollum's going and Nurkic. And
especially in this Utah. Environment, right? Like yeah. with everything yeah. that's going on. I think that's huge.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I say it because I just watched the Warriors preseason opener, and the Warriors have, there's the theory of a good team, and I know we'll get to the Warriors, but, you know, they're bumper cars out there. They're just like, wait, why right. is Steph Curry kind of right. over here? Because, right. you know, they've never played together. Kelly right. Oubre and Wiggins, and it's just like a weird collection that could be good together, but I think it's going to take a couple months where Utah, Portland, they're going to probably be, you know, maybe 9-3 right away because you know,
right.
they're just going to come out and know each other. And that matters when we're talking about what you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, which is, you know, not that many games are probably going to separate the 3 seed and the 7th.
Right. All right. For the sake of actually answering these questions, Slater, where do you end up falling, Blazers or Jazz?
Utah. But maybe I changed my answer if Rudy Gobert walks into the season, you know, on a contract year. But I think Portland's offseason was a little bit overrated, to be honest with you.
I think I agree with you. Yeah.
I mean, I do like...
Although Harry Giles, man, Harry Giles might be like, if you're talking about contract efficiency, he might wind up being number one in the whole league this year. Coming Tony in on a minimum.
Sacramento bias. You hear that Sacramento bias coming out?
Listen.
Just saying.
The thing with Harry, you just gotta look at Harry and be like, look, man, your best ability is your availability. And that's...
Yeah.
You know, if he could stay on the floor, I mean, that's a steal to me because he's really, really talented in a lot of ways.
The minimum, man.
You know,
the minimum.
So the question is whether or not he can stay on the floor. The thing that I look at with Portland is, I mean, you know, Robert Covington aside defensively, you know, who do those guys stop? Because they still have too many guys that have to play that just don't stop anybody. And
right.
and that's to me the separator between Utah and Portland, because I think both teams are dynamic defensively. I think the Jazz can get more stops at the highest level defensively. Both teams are dynamic offensively, but I think the Jazz can get more stops defensively at the highest level than Portland can.
So I think I'm accurate. We all three got Utah. Is that the verdict here?
Yeah, I would take Utah. I was going to say bubble belief or bubble mirage. I would say the Gary Trent Jr.
Yeah,
you know, is he what he was in the bubble? If right. he is, I mean, he's a rising, you know, like not all star, you know, but like a rising, really good wing.
Right.
Portland might be elevated, but if he's Gary Trent from what we thought, I don't know.
Yeah, I got Utah too. I think we need to be careful not to overlook what they've already accomplished. And again, terrible finish to the playoffs last year, but I think they're going to be dangerous. And if they don't have drama, which we know they had plenty of last year, I think they're going to be in a very good spot.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I don't know why I'm going to keep pushing the Clippers down this list so we can have bookend kind of LA discussions, but let's jump into Slater's backyard. Well, I don't know.
Okay, let's
talk Warriors, man, because we're talking about you know, deeper into the playoff kind of breakdown. And how does that look? And it, you know, we do this to a degree every year where we just talk about teams as if they are would-be playoff teams without actually doing the math and figuring out, you know, reminding ourselves that only 8 squads can get in. This is definitely one of those years. You look at the Warriors, and so the question is, are the Warriors a playoff lock? And you know, your mind tells you, oh, yeah, Steph Curry's back, this and that. Wait a minute. I don't know. Like, break it down. It's going to be tough. But Slater, what do you think?
Well, what's interesting is now, are we considering if you get in the play-in a lock, like all the way down to 10?
Yeah, the conversation. That's a good question.
But I mean, the answer to your question is no. I mean, Steph Curry's got to stay healthy. I witnessed it last year where game 4, he, you know, driving, boom, breaks his hand. And it's like they're the worst team in the league, you know, with one play. So if you're guaranteeing me Steph Curry is going to play 66 of 72 games, I wouldn't say lock. I would say I would predict that they would be a playoff team. Now, I've identified kind of that 6th seed as their target. But to me, this is a Steve Kerr season. Prove you are Eric Spoelstra, who has gone through, you know, Eric Spoelstra had the LeBron, Dwayne Wade teams that was like, he became an NBA title coach that way. But okay, Steve, can you kind of rearrange who you are? You no longer have the Iguodala, the Sean Livingston, the David West, those smart teams that perfectly are, you know, pass and fluidity offensively like you want, and you know what they're going to do defensively. Can you turn what I was mentioning earlier, a weird but intriguing collection of talent, I would say, with like Oubre and Wiggins on the wing. I do think Draymond will be good defensively this year, even though he's still not going to shoot. This Wiseman idea center-wise, like, can you turn that into what he is saying in training camp? Steve is pretty, you know, he's pretty honest, quote, he thinks they could be a top 10 defense. He thinks they could be an elite defense, he says. But that's going to take a little bit of time. You know, you talk to people behind the scenes, they think they're going to start slow. They start on the road, 4-game East Coast road trip, which includes Brooklyn opening night, Milwaukee on Christmas. You're probably talking about 0-2 potentially right there.
If Durant and Kyrie look anything like they did last night, I know it was a Wizards team that didn't play anybody, but my God, that might be ugly out there.
Yeah, and you know, every team is dealing with this, but Draymond Green has not practiced.
When's he coming back? Any clarity?
Sounds like they're hoping him and James Wiseman could get back into practice. Neither of them are likely to play one preseason minute. And to me, that's a big concern on Wiseman, right? You wanted to plug and play him 25 minutes at center. He's behind the eight ball now. You're a rookie, a 19-year-old who played 3 college games, and you're not going to get one, you know, a training camp practice or a preseason minute in. Opening night, you're going to be guarding, you know, Kyrie and KD, you know, and like pick and roll type stuff. So I think come month 2, we're talking about a team that does look like they're a fringe playoff team. But if Kerr has a good season, if they come together, I do think that we could be talking about them in the 5-seed, 6-seed conversation, but there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of ifs. If we went down the roster, this has to hit well.
I like your pressure angle, because you're right. Like, if they're going to do it, these things have to happen. Don't you think some of that those pressure points should be put in Draymond's direction? Because to me, like, I mean, this is a huge year for him.
Yeah, no question. He's stepping into a 4-year, $100 million extension. He was bad last year. It was his worst professional season last year. He hasn't shot above 30% from 3 now in 3 seasons. And he took a year off. And honestly, I understand why he did. We all know Draymond's mentality and the fact that Draymond needs to be in like just a winning environment to care. And Draymond's one of those players that, like, when he does, you know, when an elite scorer doesn't care, he can still go out there and score 19 and everyone will kind of be like, whatever, you know, he had an okay game. When Draymond's not good, he's like, it's bad. So yes, this is completely on his mentality. You know, and when Steve Kerr says they think they could be an elite defense, that's Draymond Green is the engine of that, and the mental and you know, obviously physical engine of that. So a lot of pressure on him. But from private, you know, from conversations behind the scenes with people that know him and even him, he's confident. He thinks he's going to have a bounce back season.
Right.
And the truth is, and this is how he will put it, anytime the basketball has mattered, he's always been there. Every time, you know, you cannot name one playoffs that he had a bad playoffs. And his thought is, look, when the stakes are back, because they weren't there last year, he'll be Draymond Green again.
We'll right, see. Right. Tony, what do you think on the Warriors front, brother?
Yeah, I think they're in that 6-7 seed conversation. I mean, I think they're a playoff team because, you know, I think you have to say that out of respect for Stephen Curry. I mean, he's been that great, and he bends defenses that much. You know, I think when you look at Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins, those guys are going to see looks that they've never seen before. You know, I think that once you get James Wiseman up to speed, I think that his athleticism and his ability to rim run and play above the rim is going to matter, especially with Stephen Curry. You know, so I think combined with that, combined with how athletic I think the Warriors are going to be, the Warriors are going to be really athletic. They're going to be long and athletic on the wings. Wiseman gives them, you know, a freak athlete in the middle. You know, so they're going to be they're going to be an athletic team. And, you know, and Stephen Curry, to me, is still one of the top five players in the world. You know, the issue with the Warriors is they still have some they have some flaws, right? Like, they're not the shooting team that they used to be, especially, you know, once you get past Stephen Curry throughout the roster. So Steph's going to see the spacing this year that he used to see in 2011 when he had Monte Ellis, you know. Right. Yeah, that's the kind of spacing that he's going to have this year.
That's the other story coming out of this team to me is, and Steph is so popular in the media for obvious reasons because he's very, you know, professional, respectful. Nobody wants to say it like this. The worst case scenario for Steph and the Warriors this year is that his legacy takes a hit. Like, it really could. I think if it doesn't go well and if they don't make the playoffs, then you have stars all over the NBA that I think would rightly look at this Warriors situation and say, I mean, if you can't get your squad to the playoffs, even though you're down your co-star, you still had talent around you. You know, they need to get to the playoffs for him to not take, I think, justified hits. And I don't know, because I hear you guys on 6 spot, 7 spot. And then again, it's like then you start breaking down the list. Let's say you go Lakers, Clippers, Utah, Denver, Portland, Dallas.
That's six.
You know, maybe through. Yeah, maybe throw it. Then Phoenix has got Chris Paul. We're going to get to them in a minute. Let's say somehow, some way, things go pretty well in Houston. You know, I mean, Houston could be a playoff team. You know, they might be scratching to get into that play-in tournament, you know, just to get a chance at this thing.
Yeah, you know, I think that Golden State's better than Houston. And I think they're better than Phoenix. I think Phoenix is the team that we all need to pump our brakes on.
Okay.
You know, so I would at minimum put Golden State over both of those teams. Now, I would put them behind the first six. Like, I think both LA teams, Utah, Dallas, Portland, Denver, you know, all six of those teams to me are separated from the rest of the West. You know, and I just think that a lot has to go right with Golden State. Like, Steph has to be great. I think that Steph is going to be great, but Andrew Wiggins has to be terrific. Kelly Oubre has to be terrific. Draymond Green has to be terrific. And even then, there's still some flaws. Like, the best Warriors teams had two or three, even at sometimes four guys who were terrific off the dribble who can bend the defense. This team has one. Stephen Curry is your dynamic ball handler. And, right. You know, he's not used to being the only dynamic ball handler. And Stephen Curry is your only dynamic shooter. And he's not used to being your only dynamic shooter. So it's going to be, not only is it going to be, you know, not only is it going to be an adjustment period for guys playing with Steph, it's going to be an adjustment period for Steph dealing with the guys who are his supporting cast as well.
Yeah, I think they need to get themselves out of half-court offensive settings as much as possible.
Get in transition.
The one thing I've been encouraged so far is they know this. Steve Kerr's talking about it's got to be a fast team. It's got to be a disruptive team. It's got to be a good defensive team. Kelly Oubre, just, you know, go guard Jamal Murray in the preseason. You know, just try to make things happen defensively, get moving. And to me, and we can flip this maybe conversation to Dallas, that is the team I'm kind of looking at the Warriors against, because there's this idea, you know, Luka Doncic is kind of a singular force in Dallas, and he's going to just will them to, you know, 4-seed, 5-seed, whatever people think on Dallas. Do we think Doncic is better than Curry at this point? I would say the general thought is people believe Doncic in Dallas will be better than Curry in the Warriors. And I just think that's interesting. And to me, this might be an MVP conversation type thing. If both teams are good, to me, who's better, Doncic or Curry? And that might be just like which team is better. Because Luka's, to me, got a similarly flawed roster below him. And I don't know Kristaps Porzingis' medical report, but where are you guys at on Dallas?
If we're going to look at, flaws with Golden State's roster, we got to look at Dallas as well. I mean, how much shooting did they lose with Seth Curry going to Philadelphia? And, does the defense that Josh Richardson bring, does that defense offset the lack of shooting, the shooting that they lost, and possibly the lack of spacing? And then, I think the other thing is, you're relying on Trey Burke to be what he was in the bubble off the bench somewhat, even though they get Jalen Brunson back. And I think Jalen Brunson has a chance to be someday the best backup point guard in the league. So it's one of those things. I think they gained a lot of I think they gained some defense. I think them getting Powell back is going to be good for them. But if the thing with what Anthony said, if Kristaps Porzingis is out for the first month or the first 6 weeks, or if he doesn't get back until February, something like that, how good is this team in relation to the rest of the West?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Mavs are going to struggle to be in that mix until Porzingis gets back. They add James Johnson too, which I'm curious to see if that, conceivably that checks the toughness box that was missing when they played the Clippers. And I saw that firsthand. That was actually, I take that back. I think I was in quarantine in the bubble when that series was going on. But like, they got punked by the Clippers from the toughness standpoint. And when you have a guy like Luka, you got to have a crew around him to essentially let him be great, and so that he's not having to fight his own fights. James Johnson is there to do that, but it's one guy. I don't know how much difference that's going to make. And I think sometimes we also overlook the coaching stuff. We got to, be remiss if we didn't also say they lose Steven Silas, who was the offensive coordinator for their crew, statistically the best offense in the history of the game in the regular season. So they're going to be there at the end. I think they're going to come on strong at the end. But I think if things got sideways, that's one of the teams that could find itself in the play-in tournament. I know that sounds crazy because of Luka and how great he has been so far, but it's another year of opposing defenses trying to figure him out. Now, obviously, year number two, they figured him out even less than they had in year number one. But I think that matters. A lot of boxing ones, like you guys talked about with Steph, I think Luke is going to see that too, and he's got to continue improving that 3-point shot, because it's so deadly when he hits it, that step back, but he's still coming in at 32-33%.
That's the question I have. If he continues to shoot, because right now, he's shooting 30% from three, but teams are guarding him as if he shoots 40% from three, if you know what I mean, right? Like, yeah. It's still, we're respecting Luka. Don't let Luka shoot. If he continues to shoot 30, 31, 32% from three, do teams start guarding him different? That's my question.
Right. Right. And I'm looking here. He was
without Seth Curry around, with less space. He should have less space. They're still not.
And he even actually went down, by a hair last year. He was 31.6 last year, 32.7 in his rookie year. And it's funny, I remember talking to Steven Silas about that shot from Luka, and Steven talking about how in the beginning of his time with Luka that they would have film sessions where he'd be telling Luka, like, that step back is not a good shot, please stop taking it. And then he started to learn about, the part that doesn't show up in the numbers of that shot, that it was changing the gravity on the floor, and Luka knows how to use that shot in the kind of way, that took their offense to a new place. But to your point, Tony, I think that might get defended differently going forward, and a lot for them to work through. So Dallas will be in the mix. let's wrap up here on the big boys and take it back to LA. We kind of short shrifted the Suns a little bit. I don't know if you guys want to jam in any quick CP and Phoenix hot takes.
Play-in tournament superstars. They're that's where I see them in the play.
Yeah, I'm with Anthony. I mean, you know, there were so many people, 5 seed, 4 seed. I'm not there at all. Beyond Chris and Devin, to me, it's still a pretty, I don't want to say a thin roster, but, you know, in relation to the top 6-7 teams in the West, I still think Phoenix is at best the 8th best team in the West.
I'm dying to see it, like whatever it is. I give Chris a lot of credit for the way he handled his OKC chapter and not only, you know, having a good impact on guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but even Dennis Schroeder, who was a vet. But, you know, I talked to people recently about how, like, Chris had a great impact on Dennis. So I think he'll help Devin, you know, losing guys like Kelly Oubre and Aaron Baines. I think that matters quite a bit, even though Kelly wasn't with them at the end of that bubble experience. So they'll be fun, but, you know, Monty Williams going to have to keep coaching his butt off and trying to do his thing. Let's jump into the LA squads, guys. We know that they're going to be front and center all year long in the West. And we're going to finish with the Lakers. So with the Clippers starting there, listen, at our place, we've had just a ton of reporting about the Clippers and everything that essentially kind of short-circuited their potential last year. And Jovan Buha, our Clippers beat writer, has killed that story. And I'm talking chemistry. I'm talking preferential treatment, you know, which is something that's a reality in pro sports, but for a number of reasons has been a real focal point with these Clippers. Paul George having kind of a bizarre public back and forth now with Doc Rivers, you know, where Paul made some comments on the All the Smoke podcast with Steven Jackson, you know, essentially saying Doc didn't use me the right way. And then Doc talking to Cassidy Hubbard with ESPN comes back and you know, I don't know if you guys saw that clip, but basically admits on national television that Paul's teammates didn't accept him. And so a lot to get through with the Clippers, because again, there's always this human component. If you just talk talent, then they are 100% capable of winning the whole damn thing. But how do you guys see, you know, their culture, their chemistry, and what it might mean?
Unpopular opinion. I'm picking the Clippers to win the title.
Oh, look at you.
I think and I've said this, I think an embarrassed team is a motivated team. I think Kawhi Leonard is going to have a really good season. I think Ibaka is an upgrade for what they need over Harrell, which I know, Sam, we've talked about.
Yep.
I think Luke Kennard, because he played in the obscurity of Detroit, is being underrated as kind of a helper off the bench. I think that Paul George was, you know, this, he wasn't good in the playoffs. He had a pretty good season still, if you, you know, you go back and really look. And revenge is too strong, but I you know, he's now set. I think he's gonna have a good season. And the it's tilted in LA, and you guys can get into the Laker Clipper and why who you think's better, but the Lakers to me were the motivated team last year, and that's why they had the great seasons, why they built the great habits and had the great playoffs. Their motivation to me tilts this way, and I think the Clippers goes up. I think there's a lot of reputations on the line in the Clippers, and I think the talent is there to boost them.
So I thought the Clippers had two fatal flaws last year, which actually proved to do them in the playoffs, beyond everything that happened off the floor. Their two fatal flaws were they had zero rim protection and they didn't have a dynamic point guard who could do anything, who could beat people off the dribble and get into the lane. And they fixed one with Serge Ibaka, to me, but they didn't fix the other. And I think that really matters, you know. And the third thing about them, there are really no good passers on this team. Kawhi Leonard is your best passer. And if you look at Kawhi Leonard in a vacuum and you say what kind of passer that Kawhi Leonard is, he's an above average passer. They don't have any dynamic passing on this team. And they didn't address, those are two things that they didn't address. And I think it's going to hold them back. And you know, I look at the Clippers, like I think they're the second best team in the West, but you know, I could see any one of three teams, any one of those four teams in the next tier, you know, becoming the number two seed in the West because they're just a better regular season team. I don't know how Kawhi Leonard was obviously gassed. If the Clippers had beaten Denver, the Lakers would have beaten Clippers in five games because Kawhi Leonard had nothing left by the end of that second round. And I just don't see how that gets better for him. You know, I don't see, you know, how his health and his durability gets better as he gets older, especially in a 72-game season like this where, you know, the schedule is going to be a lot more condensed than it usually is. I think if you're the Clippers and you're smart, you want Kawhi Leonard fresh for the playoffs, you should load manage him as much as possible. And if you do that, you're going to sacrifice games in the regular season. So, I mean, to me, the Clippers are a conundrum for me. I think they're really good. I think at their highest level, I think they're the second best team in the West. But, man, I just see a lot of potential for a lot of flaws on this team.
Well, and I mean, that's a good breakdown, Tone. To Andrew's question that we were hitting, like, Andrew, you had asked, and I don't think I introduced Andrew. Andrew Schlecht, our fantastic producer behind the scenes here. You had asked, will the Clippers drama keep them from the conference finals again? Like, to that question, if I got a pick, I'd probably say no. I'll put them in the conference finals. That's fine. But to the question of Lakers, Clippers, who's better, which I got into last week with a bunch of executives and scouts for a story that was pretty fun to do. Like, yeah, I'm with you, Tony. I think the Lakers are the better team. And I think the Clippers point guard deficiency, one that was highlighted by those executives, like you just said, that something that people thought they would fix in the offseason. People thought they'd get in on Dennis Schroeder. The Lakers got him. People, you know, they went and got Reggie Jackson. That's not the caliber of point guard. I don't think that people, you know, consider checking that box. And the lack of playmaking is a problem. Then you talk about the load management. Then to me, you're going to have the same conundrum that they ran into last year where you sacrifice, you know, not only games, but just the synergy that you need to build and the foundation among your group, everybody getting used to playing with one another so that when you're sitting there in the playoffs, that, you know, it's kind of like Slater, you talked earlier about continuity and why it matters. Like they've been right now, Steph Curry's teammates don't know where he's going on the court because they haven't played with him. And that happened with the Clippers at different times. The motivation thing that you bring up, Slater, like in a vacuum, I'm with you. I just don't know. I mean, we're going to see. It's going to say a lot about Kawhi and about Paul, kind of what they value in terms. I know it's cliche, but their legacy and who they're going to be remembered as players. Because Kawhi could look at this and say, listen, I'm already a multiple-time champion, a guy with multiple-time finals MVP. I don't have anything to prove to anybody. If we fall short, it's because the guys around me didn't do their jobs. And with Paul, you know, I mean, other than being the guy who you give him credit back in the day for pushing LeBron with those Pacers teams, you know, that was a good chapter for Paul. But now, you know, what's the rest of it going to be? Are you going to be the guy that takes that embarrassment and turns it into something special? You know, we shall see. Because on the flip side, we know what you're getting in LeBron James. And you know what now, I think, what you're getting in Anthony Davis and a group that likes each other and a group that got deeper. And a group that's rostered now makes it even easier for them to load manage than the Clippers roster does for them. When you talk about a Montrezl Harrell taking up minutes and putting the ball in the hole during the regular season so AD can get, you know, more time on the bench, LeBron with Schroeder and all those things. So I think Horton, to me, Tucker. It's Lakers over
Let's
Clippers.
Let's not forget Taylor Horton Tucker.
Yeah.
So Tony, yeah. I told Slater before you hopped on, and I was looking forward to sharing this little anecdote because, you know, the bubble was a cool experience and little memories kind of come and go in your mind as you talk about these different teams. So we're sitting in Lakers practice one day, I think during the Western Conference Finals. And while you couldn't always get, you know, one-on-one interviews when you wanted or the access was definitely different, practice was okay. Like you could hang out in the room, watch guys scrimmage post-game. And so one day, it's Frank Vogel doing his thing post-practice, and a couple of us writers, Dan Wookie from the LA Times was there. We're just hanging, and Frank is there, and you're a bunch of guys just watching ball. And Talen is on the court running with the Jared Dudleys of the world and doing his thing. And at one point, I think Dan mentioned something about how Talen looked pretty good. And Frank turns to us and he says, man, that effing kid, he goes, he's going to start for me next year. And like, we looked at each other like, what the hell did he just say? And we walked out of that room, like first time ever, like, okay, we knew who Talen was, but what is Frank talking about? And then you start watching and now you see this story is out. This thing is not a secret anymore. I mean, this kid is putting up numbers. He's efficient. He seems to be pretty fearless. Just turned 20. Give Rob Pelinka credit. You know, you got a GM who was much maligned, whose moves just are working left and right these days. You get him with the 43rd pick. I think they traded with Orlando for him. Yeah, Talen looks fantastic, man.
I wouldn't be stunned if, you know, a couple months from now we're reviewing him as the better prospect, maybe even better player than Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah.
You know, that to me seems like the guy who's really spot in the future of the Lakers he's coming to take. We'll see. He had 35 in a preseason game.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's starting point guard at some point this year.
Right.
Well, LeBron's the starting point guard.
I think, you know, like, I wouldn't be surprised because I think Dennis Schroeder found something in Oklahoma City coming off the bench as your change of pace guy.
He doesn't like it, though. What do you do about that, Tony? Like, he doesn't like it. Everybody you talk to is like, he won't be. I know it sounds funny because he's not a superstar. He's not a star.
Do you want a chip or not? Like,
I know. Yeah.
I mean.
But he's been vocal in the media.
Yeah, I did see that. And I mean, I get it. I mean, I think that there's something to be said for it. And you know, but man, I think that, you know, if THT continues, you know, his ascension and he continues to play the way he has, and if that translates to the regular season, I mean, what do you do with this kid? I mean, you got to play him and you got to put him, you got to play him,
you know,
I mean, it's going to be interesting. And I know what Slate said about Kyle Kuzma. I've seen a ton of that on social media, but you know, THT and Kyle are so different. You know, their roles are so different that I don't know that one's playing time bleeds into the next. You know, but
I think really it's more just like the asset, and I hate ever referring to players as assets, but just like the value of that draft pick. Kyle, I mean, I looked at it the other day, Tony. We forget Kyle was on the cover of the Lakers media guide with LeBron and AD last year. And, you know, how quickly things change. So he was conceivably going to be the third guy that was homegrown that they would elevate and he would play that role. His attitude's been great. You know, he's been willing to yield, but it hasn't worked out. You know what I mean? He's not finding an impactful role within that group. One of the executives I talked to for that story I mentioned just flat out said, I'm surprised he's still on the team. They thought he would move him. And we'll see maybe if they do going forward. But I think the takeaway as we wrap up here is that for me, I think we're on the same page. Lakers, it's Rich getting richer, and the Clippers made some nice moves that I think did check boxes. But man, the Lakers, you talk about new pieces that elevate you during the regular season to help you with the load management, which then helps you in the playoffs, combined with some of the in-house stuff like a Talen Horton Tucker becoming a player who matters. I mean, you can't do much better than that after a championship.
Yeah, I think they're the best team in the league. By, you know, and I don't know if the margin is insignificant. I think that they have more answers than any team in the league. I think they're the best defensive team in the league. I think they're matchup proof more than any team in the league. They can go big, they can go small. And they proved that last playoff in the bubble. You know, by beating Houston and Denver in consecutive series, there's just and LeBron's still the best player in the world, and you know, it's just, you know, I don't think LeBron's played on a team as complete as this. You know, the Miami might have had a touch more top end talent, but there's never you know, this is the best team that he's played on from 1 to 15. And for him, LeBron's already as good a ceiling raiser as we've ever seen in this game. So, you know, you give him this complete a roster and he's playing at the level that he's playing. it's just going to be tough to beat the Lakers in four times in seven games once it all starts.
Yeah, and I mean, my final thought on that, brother, is like we talked earlier about motivation, about embarrassment, about, you know, kind of where's your head at. LeBron, I think maybe if he was 26, 27, maybe he takes the foot off the gas pedal a little bit. I got time. I think LeBron playing at this level, about to turn 36 years old, coming off the championship, I don't think he's going to lose any focus at all this season. So,
well, he's chasing the ghost right now. So
that's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, you legitimately are making strides, you know, in the good old GOAT debate to the point where, you know, you keep doing this. You win another championship this year. That's a game changer in that discussion. He knows all of this. So I think the time factor is going to keep his motivation at an incredible level. And, you know, the Clippers and everybody else got to be ready. So, my friend, I can't thank you enough for all this time. I'm going to let you go. We lost Slater. So thank you to Mr. Slater for the time and the conversation. Always love having you on. Hope you're hanging in, brother. Thanks for joining me.
Man, thanks so much for having me, man. And Andrew, our fearless producer, thanks for having me as well. And I really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.